Hello, I'm Dr. Roger Steinert, a professor and chair of ophthalmology at the University of California, Irvine, and director of the Gavin Herbert Eye Institute. And I have the pleasure of joining through Skype Dr. David Chang, clinical professor at the University of California, San Francisco. And we're going to be discussing the just concluded annual meeting of the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgery that was held in San Francisco this past week. Nice to see you, David.
Good morning, Roger. Good morning.
David just completed his term as president of ASCRS, as well as being extremely active in the annual meeting. So we're privileged to have the opportunity to get his perspective on how the meeting went and the hot topics. The meeting began with what we've found to be a resurgence of continuing medical education. With the changes in the rules for pharma and AdvaMed, CME has come back strong and also obviously triggering a meeting in need from the audience based on the attendance of at the I believe 9 large CME events that were held immediately prior to and then scattered before and after the meeting. And David, I know you were involved in several of those. Can you give us a summary of the hot interest areas?
Sure. Let me actually just first start by congratulating Roger on finishing his term as program chair of the annual meeting. This was his 9th year doing that, and the transition is now in place for Ed Holland to take over in his place now. But this is an enormous role. It's extremely important. It was just a fantastic meeting. So, Roger, congratulations once again.
Thank you very much, David.
Yeah, the CME program is going to become increasingly important because there's so many restrictions on any corporate sponsored education in terms of talking about things off-label and so forth. So while we continue to have iWorld corporate sponsored events, at this meeting we unveiled, as Roger said, an entire new set of programs that are purely CME, developed by faculty in many cases who are members of the ASCRS leadership, either through the governing board or through the various clinical committees. For example, I was involved with 3 of them. One was regarding combined MIGS devices at the time of cataract surgery, that stands for microinvasive glaucoma surgery. And of course, the one FDA-approved device that we could talk about this year was the iStent from Glaukos. Another was regarding anti-inflammatories, where we talked about all of the different NSAIDs. As you know, there's several new ones. We also talked about the various steroid topical options postoperatively for routine cataract surgery. And then the final one was one that I helped develop. And we actually looked at how cataract surgeons could learn to do keratorefractive enhancement of their refractive IOL patients. So this could be either a mini LRI at the slit lamp, or more importantly, a mini PRK done postoperatively. I would just say that the attendance at these was phenomenal. I thought the programs were excellent. There was, of course, to have CME, you have to be very balanced. So there was really not a slant or toward product promotion of any kind. And it really resonated well with the audience, I believe.
Well, I would agree. I was involved with planning and then chairing one that was on lasers and anterior segment surgery, and we covered the gamut from keratorefractive laser applications all the way through to refractive cataract surgery. And we had well over 300 attendees, and the program went on for 4 hours and. People didn't even want to take a break. So the iWorld folks have done just a terrific job. Brad Fundingsland, in particular, creating a somewhat, I think, improved format of really fast-paced, interactive panel discussion, audience response system-based, and so everybody gets very engaged with that. And I think that very effective continuing medical education.
One of the things, Roger, that these feature that I thought was very powerful is the ability to do surveys. And so, for instance, for that keratorefractive, pseudophakic keratorefractive enhancement, we had a survey of the registrants beforehand, And then we had surveys throughout the program, and that was very, very interesting. The other thing that we're doing with iWorld is a bunch of people, a lot of attendees were actually surveyed during the meeting by staff that went around with iPads and asked questions. And so a lot of them were about topics that those attendees wanted to hear about. And so that will guide the development of CME programs in the future.
Yes, I absolutely agree. We did a pre-survey as well that guided some of the program content. And one of the directions that CME is going also, I think, is now, you know, a month or two from now to resurvey the attendees and see how their practice patterns have been changed and influenced by the CME event. Now, let's shift to the other end of the meeting. David, you chaired what is in many ways, I think, the best way to end the meeting, which is a hot topics session where the papers that were awarded best paper of the session are then discussed. So now we're talking about the best of the best. And tell us what you were impressed by and how that went.
Yes, great. You know, we had a lot of residents attending the meeting, a lot of first-time people. Of course, their number one complaint is, I can't be more than one place at one time, and there's so much I feel I could have gone to and missed. As you know, Roger, your team selected more than 750 papers, so we had a wealth of information. But of those, they were all presented at 60 different sessions, so there are 60 papers that were awarded best paper of session. And then we have people from our iWorld editorial board that actually went through in each subject category and picked three to highlight at this session, which concluded the meeting at 3 o'clock on Tuesday. So it was a lively panel discussion because we would present a few key slides or maybe a video from the session, and the panel would discuss that. Maybe I can talk a little bit about sort of some of the topics that were hot in cataract surgery. There was a lot of discussion about one paper that has appeared in print from the Northern California Kaiser. This looked at their results retrospectively when they went from purely topical prophylaxis for routine cataract surgery to then intracameral. And when they did that, their rate of endophthalmitis dropped. They did this in two stages, but when they finally went to nearly 100% of their surgeons using an intracameral antibiotic, they were able to reduce their endophthalmitis rate by 22-fold. So it was very, very, very interesting. Of course, in terms of the panel discussion, a few people still highlighted the fact that without a commercially available intracameral antibiotic here in the United States, there's still concerns about dilution errors or TAS. And of course, with the recent events surrounding problems with certain drugs from certain compound pharmacies that do compounding, that is an issue. In Europe, there's now one drug company in France, Tema, that manufactures a commercially available ceftriaxone for intracameral use. And so, of course, the panel felt that we'd really love to have something like that in the United States. Probably were it available, we'd see the adoption of intracameral antibiotic use for prophylaxis really multiplying.
It's really interesting to see how we've crossed that boundary finally, where we were arguing about whether or not intracameral antibiotics work, and now we're just going to argue about which one to use and how to use it.
Well, yeah, exactly, exactly. And at Kaiser, they actually used all three. They gave their surgeons a choice of ceftriaxone, moxifloxacin, or vancomycin. And often it was done purely or guided by whether the patient had drug sensitivities to one of these antibiotics systemically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would say another hot topic was posterior corneal astigmatism. This actually goes back to last year's meeting when Doug Koch gave the innovator lecture and talked about really why it is that we have this discrepancy often postoperatively between the keratometric cylinder and the final refraction, and that the missing piece of the puzzle was posterior corneal astigmatism. So there were actually two papers in the session that I chaired, one of which won Best Paper. This was Rex Hamilton from UCLA, which really looked at this in a number of different ways, one using the Galilee, and they found much the same thing. And in essence, the contribution of posterior corneal astigmatism tends to negate some of the with the role anterior corneal astigmatism, and therefore there would be a tendency to overcorrect with the role astigmatism. So the clinical pearl is to try to leave a half diopter of with the role astigmatism by either undercorrecting it or not treating it. Whereas when you're dealing with against the rule astigmatism, you really can go after all of it, or even very slightly, overcorrect it. One of
Yes.
the things, oh, go
Yeah, I
ahead.
was just going to say in the innovator session, as you know, Doug Koch also gave an expanded talk this year. He was last year's innovator, and described all of this. And this year, he expanded on it in a 10-minute presentation. And at least their data set so far was suggesting that if it's against the rule, he will add 0.3 diopters, and then as you said, and if it's with the rule, he subtracts 0.5 diopters. And but Doug emphasized too that this needs, an expanded database, and it'd be nice if we ultimately, and I think we probably will advance to the point where our measuring technology will actually truly determine for an individual patient the contribution of the posterior corneal astigmatism.
Well, that was a really key point because although, this sort of fudge factor I think is very important to consider and should be, it's still kind of one formula best fit for everyone, and one size doesn't fit all. So on these two papers on posterior corneal astigmatism, they were looking at, fairly large database or large studies, and they found that this factor that we just talked about held true for only about 80% of people. So if you did that, it would still probably be incorrect for about 20% of people. And that sort of, to me, points to another hot topic at the meeting, and that is intraoperative wavefront aberrometry. There were a number of papers on the AURA system from WaveTech, and finally accumulating some data showing how that this is helpful. There was one in particular on the toric IOLs paper session that showed that. And there's now a new aberrometer coming down the road. This is from Clarity, and it's called Holos. And what was exciting about this was it's actually an instantaneous continuous video readout of the refractive data. So while you're looking at the screen, you can see the eye and overlaying it, the refraction right there. So I think this will be an increasingly big topic. This technology really allows you intraoperatively to see what the astigmatism, including the posterior corneal astigmatism contribution with that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, as you probably know, the WaveTech also with the originator of this intraoperative aberrometry approach also is going the direction of the live feed. So they demonstrated their latest upgrade, which will show what's going on so that if you are getting artifact from a lid speculum or a drape or just or an under pressurized eye, all of those things can be detected and adjusted for before you derive your final reading. So I would agree with you. I think we're going to see this become increasingly standard practice as we constantly search for perfection in terms of getting our IOL powers as accurate as possible and maximize the quality of the uncorrected vision.
Right. So from Best Papers, hot off the press, our symposium, another big topic was the MIGS procedures. So there were papers presented both in results with the iStent, which is, as we said, the FDA-approved in the United States MIGS device, some with the CyPass with a suprachoroidal stent that goes ab interno through the angle into the suprachoroidal space. And I think this There's a lot of excitement here for a couple reasons. Number one, these procedures are within the skill set of the cataract surgeon and are, in fact, are done at the time of cataract surgery, typically in eyes that are undergoing surgery more for the cataract indication, but who also have mild to moderate glaucoma. Maybe they're on two medications or more. And I think the other reason it's important is this is a group for which we don't really have a great treatment now. You know, you're on two or three medications, you're undergoing surgery, but you really don't have a severe enough glaucoma, or your IOP isn't bad enough to warrant some of the penetrating filtering techniques with some of the risks that are associated with them.
I think, yeah, MIGS is certainly a hot topic, and that was evidenced also by the surge in interest in the glaucoma subspecialty day at the beginning on the Friday before the main meeting began. In the past, the ratio of attendance for cornea day versus glaucoma had been 3-1, and this year it was 3-2. So basically, glaucoma doubled relative to cornea, which is really quite impressive.
The Cataract Clinical Committee will often do a joint symposium with one of the other clinical committees, sort of where there's some overlap perhaps in the past with cornea or refractive. And this year they did a joint symposium with the Glaucoma Clinical Committee on combined procedures. And it was done as a little bit of a debate format. So, for instance, there was for advanced glaucoma, they talked about which of the combined trabeculectomy or procedures, penetrating filtering procedures, was the best choice. And then there was a separate debate about combining phaco with for mild to moderate glaucoma, what was the best procedure. And so the presentations were phaco alone, phaco plus a MIG, such as iStent procedure, phaco with ECP, and then the last one was phaco with, I can't remember what the last one was, but the iStent combined phaco was actually the winner. I'm sorry, the last one was the trabectome. I think a lot of interest in the opportunity that presents itself with cataract surgery to do something on top of that. And of course, increasing evidence through studies that just the phaco alone has a benefit, but at these symposia, there were the data were presented showing not only what does the iStent do alone. There were some studies from Armenia that now have more than 1 year follow up without any cataract surgery, just placing the iStent, and then of course there has been this one pivotal trial comparing iStent plus phaco to phaco alone and showing an incremental improvement that was still statistically significant when you combine the iStent.
Yeah, and I'm sure there was a lot of discussion about the issue of placing several, at least two iStents and getting added pressure reduction with that, even though I guess there are, right now, at least in the U.S., there are reimbursement issues or challenges with using more than one.
That's right.
Yeah. And intracorneal inlays for presbyopia seem to be heating up as well. Were there any best papers on that?
You know, that came up actually in the X rounds where I think you presented some data on that. And Dick talked about Dick Lindstrom talked about the camera inlay. In fact, I thought what you presented was really fascinating. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, thank you. The inlay that I was describing is one that's in phase 3 FDA trials. It's the Revision Optics so-called Raindrop, which is a very special high water content proprietary hydrogel, 2 millimeters wide with plus power that is put under a LASIK flap and done in one eye, the non-dominant eye, and creates basically a multifocal cornea of sorts. But it seems to be more stable and work better than trying to create that shape with PRK or LASIK, for example. But what was truly remarkable is the data has been much stronger than anyone would have imagined. The average patient was had near vision of J1, and yet within a month had distance vision at the, again, on the average at the 20/25 level. So it's not monovision. It's somehow patients are decoding and doing well and getting the near benefit, but not losing that much at distance. And the patient satisfaction surveys showed that more than 90% of patients rated themselves as satisfied or very, most of them in the very satisfied category. A different paper that I presented, not at the X-Rounds, but separately, we went into a statistical analysis, a multivariate analysis of what makes patients happy or unhappy with presbyopia inlays. And what we found is that the two big drivers were the quality of near vision and the absence of distracting things such as glare or shadowing. Not so much the issue of what is my distance vision with my reading eye. That did not turn out to be much of an issue at all in the minds of the patients. And I thought it was kind of interesting, though, that these photopic symptoms turned out to be a major issue, because that matched Randy Olson's presentation at Binghorst last year, I guess it was, and then also a published paper that's come out from the Moran group, where dysphotopsias are one of the biggest issues in patient satisfaction after cataract surgery with IOL implantation, much more than I think we've always kind of concentrated on acuity issues, but the distracting visual symptoms are quite bothersome to patients. In the little bit of time we have left here, I want to give you a chance to describe the outreach efforts that ASCRS is doing for resident education, because I think it's really been quite a remarkable advance in the past couple of years of all the things that are being done to help the residents improve their quality of their education, and particular at the annual meeting. David?
Yep. Well, thanks. Yeah, there's certainly been a commitment on the part of our leadership toward sort of improving our offerings for resident surgical education. So outside the annual meeting, certainly we've done a focus in iWorld on this. There are now four regular columns within iWorld that are of particular interest to trainees. And so that was one of the early steps. Ed Holland and Bonnie Henderson have developed a program for residents at the annual meeting specifically for them. And then our young ophthalmology committee actually goes through the entire program and selects symposium courses that they feel would be of particular interest to both residents and young ophthalmologists. So this year was the second year of Ed and Bonnie's program. For the first time, we also collaborated with UCSF. They have an advanced microsurgery course for residents, that occurred this year with a special four-hour didactic sort of course dealing with advanced microsurgical techniques. Is really geared toward chief residents. One of the things we unveiled this year is a project that we've been working on for pretty much the entire year during my presidency, and that was to develop an online classroom for FACO training, and it's entirely free. So it's really intended as a resource for any resident and really any ophthalmologist in the world with an internet connection, so that they can access some of the teaching resources and our best teachers here within ASCRS. So this is an online site called FACO Fundamentals Classroom. You can get to it right from the ASCRS homepage, and it's going to archive, and it just opened now, a number of courses, a lot of videos, some e-textbooks. There's a wealth of information there. And unlike, say, YouTube, we have an editorial board, which is made up of some of the most talented and acclaimed FACO teachers in residencies who really select the material. So it's really gone through this filtering process. And we hope our listeners will check it out, maybe spread the word to others. A lot of specific courses from the annual meeting were captured, and will be uploaded to this free classroom. So finally, you know, as you know, Roger, we've made the registration for the annual meeting free for residents. So we're very pleased to see that the number each year has been growing in terms of the number of attendees.
I think it's just been an awesome improvement and commitment to resident education. You know, at the beginning of the session today, you mentioned how the frequently heard complaint that, wow, there's just too much going on. I can't attend very much. You know, I can't get to everything, which is true. But you know, the alternative of just saying, well, we're going to reduce the meeting to and force you to go to just one thing and not give you choice, that's not a very appealing answer. So as technology has continued to improve, ASCRS is capturing more and more and archiving it. And so not just for resident education, but more and more of the content of the annual meeting is available through the website. So folks who either missed things or even didn't attend have the opportunity to get a lot of very positive education through the ASCRS website.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because for members, we have a media center, and you can go to the media center and really see all sorts of great programming from the annual meeting archived. I would particularly recommend people check out the films and the film festival, which was a great event, as always, this year. And I'll just leave you with this one recommendation. Check out a video by an Indian doctor named Jagat Ram. That's J-A-G-A-T, Ram, R-A-M. And he showed a film of a child with a developmental anomaly. They actually had two corneas and two lenses. And he showed what he did in that. The operative video, I think it's one of the few times I've seen the entire film festival audience stand up and give a standing ovation. So I don't want to spoil the surprise in what he did, but check out that video.
Wow. Awesome. Okay, well, that's a great way to end. I'm Dr. Roger Steiner. On behalf of Medscape, I'd like to thank Dr. Chang for joining us and having such a great discussion. And thank you, the audience, for listening. So long.